PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
Hello, you golfing legends, and welcome back to another episode of the original Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards, and joining me this week is Mr. Jason Felicitas. Did I say that right?
You got it right.
I always ask before, and I skipped it this time. It's great to have you on. Jason is with MCA. He's got a really big name, Manager Tour Performance and Fitting Innovation, Global Sports Marketing, Mitsubishi Chemical America. That is a big one, and I bet it comes with a pretty solid story.
It does. I mean, a lot of that is the company name, so it's, you know, I can't take a whole lot of credit for that. But the kind of the genesis of where all this came from is I've been a tour representative with this company for about 4 years now, and we have had some opportunities to grow as not just inside our tour world, but grow even into training and developing fitting protocols and taking all of this knowledge base and this R&D that we do out on tour and be able to apply it to fitting everyday golfers. And so that is a large part of where my role has expanded to, is taking all of these things that we've gotten from tour. When we're working with tour players, we see all of these really good golfers, but they are able to give us insight into, here's how we fit everyday golfers. So that's where we've gone and where we've gotten to, and kind of what I'm in charge of now.
That's awesome. You said 4 years with the company, right?
I started in the beginning of 2022.
Okay. And were you on the road getting going? What's been your primary focus during your time with MCA?
A large part early on was with the Korn Ferry Tour. So it started in the developmental ranks and was out there pretty much full time for several years. And then over the past, I'd say year and a half, I've split time between the Korn Ferry and the PGA Tour, and been able to work a little bit on DP World Tour and LPGA as well. And so have kind of grown with the company in both, you know, the tours that I cover, the players that I've gotten to interact with, the coaches, the other tour reps. It's been a really, really cool journey, and hopefully keep going as long as they keep hiring me, you know?
Well, yeah, heck yeah. That's awesome. Do you get to spend much time with non-tour players? Do you get to see that sort of engagement that the everyday golfer has with your product?
I do, to a degree. We don't have as many, you know, in the consumer side of it. It's not quite the same as with an OEM, where you have these these fitting reps that are out around the country, right? We're a little smaller team and we have different focuses, but I still spend my time in and around local fitting shops, like, you know, Golf Marts and places like that, because that's where I cut my teeth back in the day, 10 years ago. And I still enjoy being around those fitters and helping them, you know, grow in their fitting base as well. And then every once in a while, they'll be like, hey, I have a player right now that needs this sort of help, and I'm able to lend some knowledge or some fitting, you know, acumen to their process as well. So I do spend my time a little bit around consumer and retail fitting. And that's where our kind of training and our next generation of fitting is going.
Oh, cool. I've always found it incredibly interesting that there's definitely a different side to the story between shaft and clubhead. It's almost like, you know, the clubhead sometimes or oftentimes ends up becoming the bigger part of the story, when in reality, you need that driving force that a shaft connects hands to clubhead. So, sure. You know, it's like that unbelievably important supporting cast that really makes all the difference in the world once you find a head that really works for you. But at the same time, it's almost like a secondary thought once you are like focusing in on a fitting. It's like, all right, well, you know, we'll focus on head, then we'll get a shaft that works with that head. When in reality, you know, I think there should be more to it than that. And I'm really curious about this side of it, especially coming from tour. And now you suggested you have some solid experience with the other side of it, our side of it as well, the AM side. Does it feel different when you have those really high level tour players looking into your shafts out of pure curiosity versus an amateur who's looking to better understand shafts or, you know, try and find something that really marries up?
So it's interesting. You know, this probably starts at the at a much lower level in terms of the discussions we have between like a tour player and an amateur. And I think there's in the industry, there's a thought, and maybe it's a little bit of a misthought, that tour players get fit completely different than amateurs do. And the way that I've seen it over the years that I've been out on tour, and again, going back to, I worked in a golfsmith and I worked in a golf mart, so I've worked around amateurs, and that's where I cut my teeth in fitting. I think the fitting itself is not as different as people think it is. Tour players are trying to shoot lower scores just like amateurs are. They just do it more regularly and better than we do. But the discussions that are around it encapsulate a lot of the same ideas, right? The idea around launch and spin windows, right? We talk about them on the amateur side. We talk about them on the professional side. Targets, right? Learning how to hit alignments. All of those things that are around fitting are universal. The depth that we go into them might be different, right? The knowledge that we tap into is probably a little deeper on the tour professional side, because we might have a conversation about keeping, you know, for just throwing a term out, spin delta, right? Keeping it maybe tighter inside a 100, 200 cycle window. With an amateur, we may be talking about 500 or 600 cycles, right? The amount or the tightness of the windows that we talk about get tighter on the professional side, but the general discussion about hitting the ball higher, stopping power, those are things that can transcend both sides of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, from our side of it, we're just trying to help players better play better golf. That's my number one goal. So at that, it's just, how do I best do that? With an amateur, it might be a discussion about hit it into more fairways, right? Generally speaking, if you hit more fairways, you score better. With a professional, we might be talking about specific segments of the fairway to hit, right? So that the windows just become that much tighter, even though the general discussion is the same.
When it comes to tour, let's just get straight into it. What's that conversation like? How is it differentiated from one to the other?
In terms of if we're to talk about the PGA Tour versus per se like the LPGA Tour?
Yeah, or the Korn Ferry, sure. Or different levels. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I think when players move up a level, let's go from the Korn Ferry Tour to the PGA Tour, right? So what we see a lot of times is the knowledge around strokes gained, understanding how to score better, and more importantly, how to reduce penalties. That's a huge step. So a lot of times the conversations that I have with Korn Ferry players that I want to see graduate to the PGA Tour is being more tactical, understanding the roles of each club off the tee. A lot of times it's reducing drivers down to a single shot shape, right? I would say that there's very commonly that you'll see an early issue with younger players is they want to see two different shot shapes with the driver. And when you look predominantly on the PGA Tour, you see mostly players that see one shot shape off the tee. And if they want to see a different shot shape, they use their three wood. So having those discussions, that might be one of the differentiators between going from the first level to the second, or the major level, right? The types of conversations that we might have that differ between like the LPGA and the PGA Tour are typically around spin and height. So PGA Tour players obviously have a little more speed. They can create higher windows. They can create better stopping power. And LPGA, there's more conversations around how do we create that height and spin, which clubs fit into that category better, and what is going to give you the maximum amount of not just distance, but usable distance, right? Mm-hmm. From 160, 170, 180, right? So those conversations differ, but again, it's the same general conversation, just attacked two different ways.
Yeah, I feel like the mindset between tours, at least from an optics looking in, if feels so different. Like I've always heard that Korn Ferry is just loaded with guys who absolutely obliterate the golf ball, and it's about finding that next level of precision to make that next step up. But I also have this perspective on the LPGA Tour that they are just absolutely the most crafty people with a hybrid or a three wood or a driver in their hands. and there's this like hyper precision that goes on at their level. So, you know, at least being on the ground there, are those pretty fair assessments?
I would say it's pretty accurate. We see a lot of players on Korn Ferry Tour that are closing in on 190 ball speed, which on the PGA Tour is, there's several of them, but you don't see it as often, I would say, right? You don't see a lot of players reaching back for it. It comes down to course. In that specific instance, a lot of that is course design, layout, and preparation. So the way that Korn Ferry events are set up are different than PGA Tour events. And so you will see a little bit more, there's a more, more players that engage risk on the Korn Ferry Tour, because that's, you have to shoot 20 under par to win a tournament. And then you will see more on the PGA Tour, a little more tactful use of fairway woods, maybe even irons off the tee, because position means more than distance does in some respects, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously, we'll have tournaments that are set up for we call it the bomb and gouge, but you also see a lot of tournaments that are won at, you know, almost single digits because the course is tighter. It plays much more difficult out of the rough. The greens have more penalty around them. So having those discussions with players and understanding that you can, you know, to get through in the Korn Ferry Tour and to play those courses, you need one style of golf. But to develop as a player that wants to stay on the PGA Tour, you have to develop an additional side to yourself, whether it be a statistics mentality or a slightly more conservative approach, right? So having those discussions. On the LPGA Tour, a little bit different, where you're looking at, like you were saying, the shots that these players can hit with longer clubs is very impressive, right? It's not necessarily that high, you know, high cutting seven wood from 230, but it's the ability to hit a three hybrid into the middle of a 5 yard neck of a green, right? That just makes it an unbelievable shot that, you know, these players hit on the range all the time. And you may not see that type of shot being played because other player, you know, on the PGA Tour, you might hit something longer and higher, right? But mm-hmm. that's not necessarily an option for it. So yeah, there's some impressive shots that get played across the board.
Yeah, I'd love to keep going down this crazy tour dive because it's so interesting. And we're also coming up on a couple different style of tournaments. I believe you're on location somewhere pretty interesting right now, which is sick.
yeah.
But there's there seems to be a lot of discussion around head type when you go to different elements, whether it's firm and fast fairways or highly windy conditions or, you know, soft ground forces you to change bounce on a wedge or something like that. What is it like for a shaft conversation? Do you see a lot of stay in the same family, switch color? Do you see much change there?
That's a great question. Yeah, we do get that one a lot. And I would say it's really interesting. There's for what we fit a lot of times, I'd say 60 to 75% of the players will play a different driver shaft relative to the fairway wood shaft. And a lot of times it's indicative of, like we said, like I was talking about shot shape, where you have a driver swing that does one thing, whether it be a pole cutter or a push drawer or a straight line fader, right? There's a few different ways that you'd swing at it, and as well as, you know, the biomechanics of the player, right? Being super ground force heavy or rotational heavy. You might have one type of player there. They may like, you know, pole cutter may like a DM on a whiteboard, right? Because it starts more left out of the window. It's a little easier to transition hard on, right? Because it's a little firmer profile. But then you may get that same player that wants to hit big draws with the three wood, or might want some softness that lets them play in the different trajectory windows. So they might play a blue or a red board, depending on kind of the feel they're looking for, especially if they're going to hit like a push draw, they need it to start more right. So they go softer, make it, let it droop a little more, let it come out of the different side of the window than the driver would be. So I'd say we see more of that. That's more common. We don't see as many players playing the exact same model, but there are still those players as well.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm the kind of guy where once I find something that works, I'm not going to mess with that until I absolutely have to. So hearing that they're willing to make changes week to week is, I think, both an impressive thing and an incredibly interesting thing that doesn't seem to get talked about enough. But it makes perfect sense. But one thing you mentioned that I thought was really curious, you talked about a couple of guys really favoring one side with a driver and then having a slightly different shape with something else. I assume that's things like spin management and, you know, playing to certain shapes or indirections. That's really interesting. Something I think that not a lot of people are thinking about right now. They want one shape with all clubs. And yeah. As someone who hits a little bit of a cut with driver right now and hits draw with everything else, it's driving me crazy. Maybe I should be happy about it. Maybe it works.
Yeah. I mean, if you want me to get really nerdy about it, I definitely can.
I do. But, yeah. 100%.
So if you're thinking of, you know, we think about everything from a strokes gain perspective, right? Where is the player going to gain the most amount of advantage on the golf course with certain shapes? Well, with driver, it's the lowest lofted club. It spins the least out of everything in the bag. Knowing that, we know that shots that fade, so left to right for a right-handed golfer, retain more spin on them. And if you miss a shot, it's typically going to go the same direction, and it's also going to spin more if you really miss it. Well, that does two things for you. One, it makes the miss really predictable, and two, it keeps the ball in play. So if you have more spin, if you're hitting a fade that spins at, say, 2600, and you hit it a little out of the heel, it might go up to 3,000. Well, that 3,000 shot's probably going to stay in play because it won't travel as far and it doesn't fly quite as far offline. If you were to take that same math and that player that spins it, say they spin it lower and they hit draws, so 2,200. Well, if they miss it a little bit in the toe, that 200 or that 2,200 becomes 1,800. It actually moves more left and gets on the ground faster, which releases more. So you end up from that side of it, you see a lot more players these days playing fades with the driver because it's more predictable. It starts in a more predictable window and it spins more, which gives you more control. But that's not necessarily the same with a three wood because it has 5 to 7 more degrees of loft on it than a driver does. So it spins 1,000 cycles more. You can afford to hit a draw if it's spinning at 3,300, 3,400 because it's spinning enough to retain its line and it typically doesn't turn over. It won't turn over and get too knuckly on you. So that's why you'll see players have the cut driver with the draw three wood, because from a strokes gain perspective, both of those are easier to play than trying to hit a driver that turns over and a driver that cuts.
Mm. Yeah, the one shot miss plus the one shot control. Both sounds pretty good.
I mean,
to me.
it's a good combination.
That's awesome. I feel like we need to talk a little bit about Diamana. I mean, 20 plus years in the storyline already. This is, I believe, Gen 6 for you guys.
Yes.
How are things going there? You have a bunch in the lineup. You've got some great looking designs on one called a Stinger, which I don't know a ton about, and a Thump. What's going on with Diamana this year?
So Diamana, we've completed the family. The sixth generation family has been released. We have a red, white, and a blue profile. They all have legacies and, you know, major championships. They've all been played by some of the greatest players in the world. This newest line features some of our best technology that we've had in Diamana. You know, materials like the 80-ton dialed material. It's in the handle. It's been used before, but it's a really, really high quality carbon fiber. These X-Link technology that not a lot of people maybe know too much about, but it's basically a resin system for us that allows us to control the amount of glue that holds the shaft together. Think about it this way, the more premium material that's in the shaft, the better it feels. And we were able to reduce the amount of glue, the resin content of the shaft, down to levels that make the shaft more pure carbon. So you get a better feeling shaft that performs the same and doesn't have issues with durability or anything like that. So we're really forward thinking on that.
The durability is a conversation that everyone has in mind. You know, there's nothing easier than ripping a steel iron shaft out of a club and pushing it back into another one without any fear of damage. It's sure. A little different on the graphite side. So when you start to talk about durability, it's a real conversation point. I would assume with reduced amount of resin in there, it actually makes it a slight bit more durable, especially when you're going and trying it in different heads, which is a very careful and patient process. But at the same time, what does that say about the product material overall and what kind of shelf life would it have with less of that glue to keep it together?
Yeah, so it's so the thing about it is once the shaft is been baked, it's been fully hardened, you're not going to have, unless you're adding severe heat to the process, you're not going to have the shaft, like we call it delaminating, where the actual carbon fiber plies are falling apart. You can't do that unless you're actually rebaking the shaft, or, you know, if you're careful with the way you pull it, you can still use it, you know, still using an head in another head or a couple of trials. But really the actual thing is resin is what is providing some of the durability, because resin is softer than carbon fiber. So if you end up with a shaft that doesn't have enough resin and is too stiff and too low of torque, it actually has severe durability issues because carbon's a little bit on the brittle side. So that's where this X-Link process that we use is really proprietary, is really, really important, because we can get the resin content down to levels that are significantly below the industry standard, still make the shaft durable, and it feels better. So we're getting all of the best of what you would want in a shaft without any of the compromises that normally would be associated with taking that much of the glue out of the shaft.
Mm. Tell me a little bit about when you guys go into development on some of these new products. I would hope that you take them to Tour Blank and let mess their heads a little bit, since, you know, we're usually the ones on the AM side to get messed with because we don't know what's going on.
Right.
When you do that, and especially when you take it to someone who's extremely familiar with your product from previous gen, what's that like? What kind of looks on their face do you get when it's just a little bit different, but it almost feels like home?
Yeah, that's, you know, you hit on something there. That's what we go for. Whenever we introduce a new product, we do take it to tour. We do test it blank. The prototypes will be completely blacked out, and we kind of want that initial feedback from the player. And we know we've hit something when the player looks up, they see the shot that they've just hit, and it's where they want it to be, right? Falling in line with, and then they look at it like, that felt really familiar. That's something that we like to hear, because we know, especially with Diamana is a product that is synonymous with feel. So players that have, you know, players that have been on tour for 15 years have probably played a Diamond at some point. And we want that familiarity to it. We also want to hear which we do every once in a while, is a player that looks up, they see a shot, and like, that felt amazing. Mm. That's, you know, we want that response as well. And so sometimes it's, you know, a positive where the player says, that didn't feel great, but I like the result. Let me hit another one, right? Because that gives us the confidence that the shaft's performing in the center and off center, and that it's giving the player the correct sensation for what they want to see. And more than anything, maybe a shot that is going straight that previously they thought, if they hit it that particular way, was a little offline, that's even a better response, right? More forgiveness per se.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a real fear as a consumer with losing out on something that was at the amateur level, quality and skill and consistency comes at a premium. I'll just say that in the nicest way possible. You know, we're not out there every day banging balls in the range. When we go and play our weekend rounds, we need something that's incredibly familiar, incredibly comfortable, and is consistent as often as possible. And when you find out that your favorite shaft has changed or is new technology built into it, you know, there's a real fear from us that it won't be what it was. And you start hoarding the old ones, and then your wife starts looking at you. You know, there's a lot of weird stuff that goes on.
Yeah, that box is tucked back in the closet that's got original Blue Board in it. Yeah, I know those people. I know the people.
So is it like that on the tour as well? Or are there some guys that are truly resistant to that change? But once they get that new product in hand and they feel it and they like where it is, does it make it a lot easier for them to get connected with that new product?
Ooh, that's a good question.
You don't have to name names, man. I'm not looking for names.
No. It's a good question. The reason is, I would say that, to be honest with you, the hardest players that we have to change into new product are not consumers. It is the tour player. The tour player is the hardest player to try to get into new product. You would think it'd be as seamless as, oh, you're playing this fifth gen white part, we should just put you in a 6th gen white part. It is not nearly that simple. So that is why we try to be so careful when we're making a change or when we're going to the next generation, that we're getting the feedback from the players that have played the past generation, because those are the ones that we have to please to try to be able to get them in new product. And to that end, I think that should give the consumer confidence that if they see a player go from a 5th gen part into a 6th gen part, they should have the confidence like, oh, well, if this player who's used it for 3 or 4 years has seen that switch, I should feel comfortable that it would be a good switch for myself.
Yeah, I know it's tough.
I know we
spent a lot on Diamana, but what is it like when you go out there and it's like, hey, we don't just have Diamana, we've got, you know, Vanquish and Tensei and Kylie. Like, there's a lot of options for players to go hit and try. Is it ever surprise you where they sort of trend to, or is there one shaft, I assume it's Diamana, that is most common, that just keeps winning the battle, at least when you're putting it up against each other?
Yeah, to be honest with you, I feel like you're right. We, on the PGA Tour specifically, focus very heavily on Diamana and Tensei. They're very different animals, and they do slightly different things. So I feel like what we try to do, instead of just saying, oh, you're swinging this fast, we should put this profile, a lot of times our team will ask a lot more questions. What has the player played before? What have they had success with? Have they mentioned wanting to see a different start line? Have they said, this is a feel that I like? And that'll give us a little more idea of where we should go directionally, as you know, whether it's a Tensei family or a Diamana family.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the clues that we look for. So when we're out here, if a player says, I need something that's a little bit firmer in the handle, and probably, you know, maybe say they want it to start more right, I'm already thinking of like a Tensei part, like a softer Tensei part, because they tend to be really firm in the handle with the 1K weave that's there. And then if a player's like, I really want something that feels good, maybe they give me a start line, but they give me a lot of feel feedback, I'm going to lean directly into Diamana because that's what it's really known for.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah, it's funny to see, like, at least for my friends, you rarely see a bunch. You rarely see like a Kylie here and a Tensei there and a Diamana there. And if they do have that, then they just bought them used from somewhere. But
yeah,
you know,
when
they get into it, a lot of times it's like, oh yeah, man, I'm in Tensei. I'm white in this. I've been an orange in that for 10 years. And you know, it's very, very specific and married to those elements, which is, it's fun, but it's also like, man, you start to play yourself in a little bit of a small gap, a small window when you're not really experimenting elsewhere. But the other thing I like about it is you see some of these products as stock offerings, and it starts to open the door and explore additionally. Like, you see these names show up in these fitting bays or fitting days. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, have you hit that? No, but I'll hit it there because it's in that club. So
sure.
I'm sure there's a lot of chatter internally there about how critical it is to have some product in OEM. What's it like when you do get that right fit with that right OEM that's really taken off with, let's say, a driver head, and suddenly everyone's playing that specific shaft? Is it a feel good? Is it like, duh, we've tried to tell you? What are those moments
sometimes,
like?
Sometimes, yeah. For sure. Yeah, I mean, it's, we could definitely have that opportunity where a program comes our way and an OEM's like, you know, they may be 3 years late to the party, but they put it in and all of a sudden they see a skyrocket, and it's like, we told you this 3 years ago, but you know, now we're just kind of catching it. And at the end of the day, you know, the partnership with the OEMs is huge for us. And we like having that opportunity, that opportunity to be on the wall with their driver head. And, the kind of the world that we live in on the OEM side of things is they a lot of times have an idea, you know, early on, this is the driver head, this is the mass properties of the driver, what would you have that would pair best with this? And it's a very collaborative effort where they give us some targets to hit and we give them a couple of options, and that's where we work into what the program would look like, right? And that's worked out. There's we've had some amazing projects from work with a couple of the different OEMs that you can even see today, that have paid dividends and have also given us a deeper knowledge for performance, because we know based on, oh, this head did this or was designed to do this, its pairing was best with this product. We now kind of have an understanding for down the road if they give us a similar, you know, criteria around it. We have some ideas already that could fit into the, you know, the next generation of driver.
Because your end goal at an OEM partner is let's pick the shaft and the head combination that'll fit into most golfers that fit this very particular window they've given us, right? So it behooves you to really land that plane well.
Yeah. At the end of the day, we're doing, I mean, just like an OEM, we're trying to help players play better golf. So giving you the, as we talked about, as you mentioned at the very beginning, trying to create the correct pairing, the correct package that lets the most amount of players benefit from that package is the best option for both of us. They sell more drivers, we sell more shafts, player plays better golf.
Well, let me ask you a question that probably haunts you at night.
There's a lot of them, so you're gonna have to be way more specific.
Or you can answer your own questions, and we can really go down a rabbit hole. When it comes to, we're definitely in a new era of fit. I remember 20 years ago, like just going down on the range of the club, you chase feel, you chase launch visuals, and you chase the way the ball floats and falls. But now we're in a digital era that you can't hide from any one statistic, and there are plenty of golfers, especially ones that are willing to spend some money, that will really fight every aspect of a fitting based on a singular number they see that they can't get away from on the TrackMan or the GC Quad, whatever they're using. So my question to you is, and I assume this drives you nuts, is when, so, and I know it's tour specific, you can take this wherever you want.
Sure.
But are there any numbers that you wish you could just hide for forever, or any numbers you wish people could highlight and focus on for forever?
Sure. It's funny. I think the teaching ones are the ones that probably drive me up a wall more than anything else. And it's not because they're not important. It's because some players fixate too much on the golf swing during the fitting. Your golf swing is your golf swing. Whatever you have going into it, you should be taking that same swing out of it for the most part. Not to say that you can't improve some things, right? I hope everybody takes lessons. I think everybody should take lessons, right, around golf. But in a fitting, I definitely think that pulling back some of the numbers, like, you know, low point or swing direction, right, as opposed to swing path, the more complex things that are around the swing should probably be hidden and focus more on launch spin, start direction, right, ball speed, things that actually give you clues as to the performance of the club itself. That would be what, you know, I would focus on and try to keep focused on as a fitter. The ones I think that people fixate on in the fitting that are maybe slightly out of their control or swing speed. Unless you create better patterns with your golf swing, you don't have the ability to increase your club head speed, right? Even athletes on tour, if they're inefficient with their golf move, they're not going to be maximizing their speed. So swing speed is not a very helpful thing, but I remember in the fitting bays all the time, guys like, oh, I swung at 110 miles an hour. And I was like, that's awesome. The ball's three fairways over, but you did swing it your fastest of the day, right? And that's you know, it's an entertaining anecdote, but it is true. So I would rather focus on getting you to 165 ball speed, right? Mm-hmm. Center of the face. We know it's the center because 165 out of 110 is the fastest you're going to swing it, right? And then working on the direction, make sure that it's going straight and that it's flying the way it's supposed to.
Yeah, they're my experience going to these data specific fitting days with people who don't normally have familiarity with their distances is usually they disagree. So it says, oh, I only carried the ball 223. And it's like, well, yes, that's what you'd normally carry the ball. He's like, no, I hit it 240. Yeah, you hit it to 223 and then it rolls 17 yards. Sure. So the second they see that number, they're like, well, something's wrong. Something's not right. You got to get that calibrator. You know, a lot, there's a lot of objection to the number, right? And it's like you spend a whole fitting trying to convince him that what he's doing is real. Right. Yeah. And he doesn't have time to actually fit.
The box is telling the truth, you know.
Right.
It's like, that's a hard conversation. And that's where I think some of it is the education and focusing on 165 ball speed, one, you know, call it 2,500 on your cycles of spin, launching at 12 degrees, little nuggets that are a little bit less sensitive about the distance, because yeah, the distance might be different if you're playing really firm and fast fairways, but it's gonna be different if you're playing really wet fairways, right? And so trying to give them the positives of, well, your old setup, your old driver, your gamer, you were at 160 ball speed. Well, I picked you up 5 miles an hour and it's launching 2 degrees higher. And in theory, that differential could give you anywhere from 13 to 17 yards additional carry distance, mm-hmm. right? That whole statement is positive. It doesn't tell you how far you hit it. It's just saying that from where you started, you could pick up 17 yards additional distance. And oh, by the way, we're now hitting it straight. Like, that's all great. And it gives you the positive without having to say you were only hitting at 200, but now you're flying at about 217, right? So it yeah. gets away from that discussion and then lets them take it out to the golf course to see how it plays out in real life.
Right. I assume the numbers are few and far between when it does happen, but do you ever get the tour guy who just doesn't agree with the numbers that are coming up there?
Yeah, it's not as common as it used to be, because we're in an era where the golfers are getting younger out on tour and they've been on TrackMan for 10 years now. Mm. They are used to seeing the numbers. And more than anything, what you will see an argument on is it's to be honest, it's not so much about the numbers. It's more about the club. Sometimes they will hit a shot. They know we're hitting it on the face and it's that doesn't make sense. Right. Mm. And so that sometimes is, oh, you accidentally grabbed an X ball instead of a standard ball, right? So that will increase your spin. Or, you know, the coming from an OEM, they might look at the face and be like, oh, there's a flat spot on the face. That's why it doesn't make any sense, right? So a lot of times, because we're in an era where data is king, the analytical side, or the critical, I guess, is probably more what you're asking about. The critical side is more around how did that number happen and not about it being wrong.
Gotcha. Can you tell me a bit about MLab and what's going on over there with you guys?
Absolutely. So MLab is our kind of next generation looking at fitting training, R&D, and this opportunity around growing the knowledge base around making shafts. So we have redesigned and are bringing to life our new R&D space, which is going to include a motion capture system, has a simulator. It's going to allow us to do deeper dive into what is happening when a golf swing happens, so that we can understand how the shafts how the shaft contributes to ball flight, performance of the head, and what it feels like to the player. It also encapsulates this next generation of training that we're undertaking around what do shafts do, how do you fit them, and you know, how do we sell more shafts, especially in the aftermarket space. So the MLab is kind of the umbrella that encapsulates all of that. And we're seeing already with some of this early training that we've gotten into, it's pretty interesting, the feedback that we've been, a lot of positive feedback. And it's a space, I think we touched on it earlier, that is maybe a little misunderstood in generally in the industry of how all these pieces fit together. So MLab is trying to help us put all these pieces together so we can give it to the consumer and the fitters in the best way possible.
Yeah, I would think that things like data validation is like absolutely critical at this point. Data collection is starting to become like absolutely massive, and you have a great benefit of having that at your availability. You don't need an iron buyer, and you have that happening constantly, and be able to actually utilize some of that data to grow and increase and improve, I feel like would be a huge win for all of us.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the things that we started to get into a couple of years ago is we started to look at all this data that we're collecting, whether it be the TrackMan shots, the motion capture shots that we had all seen. And the industry has specific narratives around, well, if you use a red part, this is kind of what's supposed to happen. If you use a white part, this is what's supposed to happen. So all the data has gotten poured into those channels based on what we expect to happen, right? We had to take a step back and start looking at all of the data and saying, some of the things that we see up around shafts aren't happening the way they're supposed to. So what are the major differences? What do they do? What does a white profile do compared to a red profile? What does a blue profile do compared to a red profile, right? So we took that step back and reassessed how we have been messaging around, you know, we'll call it Diamond to start with. And that's where this new fitting philosophy has come from, is we don't always see white shafts launch low and spin less. We don't see red parts launch high and spin higher. That's something that we've done enough data collection on, and we've seen thousands and thousands of shots between all of the tours. And I can't confidently say that either one of those scenarios happened. Here's what we have seen. We see that white parts, because they are stiffer, they droop less. So they typically start the ball more left. They typically move impact slightly lower away from the toe, and they are firmer for the player. So we know they feel firmer. Red parts are the opposite. They are typically going to droop more, right? Dynamic loft lie being lower, which means that the start line will be more right. They typically will move impacts away from the heel and up on the face, and they feel softer. So that has been the genesis of this fitting direction that we're going, but it all came from all the data and looking at it and saying, is all the marking that we have around shafts accurate, and is it actually playing out in fittings the way we expect it to? And I think that is important.
So there has to be discussion around like normalized results, right? And I have a fairly long swing that is smooth, but it attacks in very specific timelines. So what I've experienced over the course of my golfing career and trying a bunch of different shafts is like, what the website tells me is almost always not going to be what my experience is. If it tells me it's doing something like this, then I'm probably not going to feel that. But I also have personal characteristics, like if it's too stiff in my hands, I'm going to attack it harder, which is going to add spin. So it's not necessarily going to lower spin just because it's a low spin profile, or like the stiffness or whatever. And I've had this huge issue with this. Like, don't just read what someone says on the internet about a golf shaft, because what you experience with it could be infinitely different. What you prefer could be infinitely different. And the ability to even categorize us as golfers, like, do you do this, 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 this? If you do, then this is what the sensations will have with these shafts. This is what you're going to feel with these shafts. I would love it if we'd stop going high launch, low spin, and focus more on feel, profile, feedback, you know, all those things that would really help sell us, because shafts aren't always the easiest thing to try. So having that real narrowed approach based on what your type swing type is would be unbelievable as a consumer.
That's where we're going with everything, right? It's very, you know, it's you might think, oh, it's a less focused approach, and in our minds, it's way more focused. It's focused on the player and meeting them where they're at in the game and meeting their needs relative to the shaft. And that's the story and the fitting and the philosophy that we're moving towards and are firmly entrenched in, that it's so much deeper, and to a degree, I think it's simpler than we try to make it. It's been the industry standard for 20 plus years that launch and spin is the story, right? For the shaft, right? It's all about color correlated to a launch and spin story. Well, you were talking about normalized results. The funny thing is, we've hit thousands of shots with robots, and the difference between a white and a red profile is very, very negligible on a robot, which is perfect golf swing. Well, that gets even more skewed once you bring the consumer into it, because those golf swings, like you said, have a lot of different identifiers to them. They're different tempos, they are different angles. There's a lot of different things going on. And those ones that we tested had even fewer correlations from profile to launch and spin windows. But like I said, with all the testing that we did see it does affect the way the club droops. We know that the club is going to droop more with red and less with white. We can say that very confidently. And we know that the white's going to feel way firmer than red, right? So with those, we start to build our fitting story around levers that we know work as opposed to levers that we're guessing at.
Yeah. Listen, man, I could talk to you for about 6 hours about this. I'm beaking pretty hard and that's fun. And I feel like we're just scratching the surface. So, you know, maybe I could just quietly beg for another episode here in a few months and talk more.
Ask away. We can definitely make that happen.
Yeah, let's do that. Before we go, though, I feel like being that you do have a ton of access to the experience and you understand what golfers are looking for right now, is there one shaft from your whole lineup that you, if someone went to a golf store and said, man, I really want to hit a Mitsubishi something or other today, tell me what they should be chasing.
I think everybody should hit Diamana Blue Board. It's one of the, it was the original Diamana shaft, and it's been one of our best performers, best feeling shafts across the board. I think if anybody had the opportunity to go and hit one shaft from our lineup, that would be the one.
Does that mean it's in your bag?
There's a couple of them.
Yes. Yeah, I figured. Yeah, there it is.
There may or may not be a 4-wood, 7-wood, and 9-wood in my current bag with it.
Oh man. Well, we need to talk about that too, because that the 7-wood, 9-wood disease is taking over and it's terrifying. I still have a 1-iron in my bag, so.
I mean, every club's a little different for everybody, but I got to the point a couple of years ago where I was struggling to get 4-irons as high as I needed them to be, and looking at a 9-wood that can peak at 130 feet going into a par 5, it looks really appealing.
Yeah, I'll bet it does. Jason, man, thank you so much. I know you got a busy week. I appreciate you taking the time today.
Dan, it's been a pleasure. Anytime, set up that next episode and I'm ready to roll.
Awesome. Hey, if you guys are playing golf this weekend, have fun. If you're going to get fit, keep an open mind. Don't read everything you read on the internet. Just go hit it and try it, and especially Diamana Blue Board, as Mr. Jason here says. We'll see you guys next week. Now it's time to send it over to Don Brown for this week's Shaft Education, brought to you by True Temper.
What's going on, everybody? Your assistant professor, Jackson Bragg, is back this week for another edition of THP. This week we've been asked, and we've had fans notice, Handcrafted is back on our website. Is there any products in the future that you may see? And the answer is yes. Be on the lookout. Handcrafted is back. Stay patient, but it will be coming. Thanks.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.